This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Feeding Time. My name is Zofnil Ting. On the show today, Feiku has a chat with Karina Bahrain from Heartland Foods Asia, a distributor of all things local, gourmet and organic.
Being new to the distribution business and having been in the game now for over a year, what was a couple of important things that you learned?
Good Lord!
If you could just distill it to two.
But first up, here's Nachman from our digital team with a food review of an unforgettable dish that he had during his recent honeymoon. So, Nachman, you've recently been on a honeymoon at, where was it? Phuket?
Yep, Phuket.
And you were telling me about this magical white tom yum soup.
I would not actually categorize it under white tom yum, actually. Because white tom yum is like an understatement for this thing.
Oh, okay.
So, it's called tom kha gai. Yeah, it's basically a coconut soup-ish. So, it uses santan or coconut milk. And it's got lots of ingredients in it, and usually they use chicken for the dish, and it's eaten with rice. So exactly like tom yum, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not spicy, right? That's the like huge takeaway that I was like mind blown from that dish. It's not spicy. It's kind of sweet, very creamy. It's like what you expect from santan, with a slight hint of sourness to it.
Huh, interesting. Because yeah. When you told me about it, I've seen the picture, and it looks like some people put chili in it as well.
Exactly.
So, and it, so it looks like kind of like mushroom soup that's kind of creamy, but with chili inside.
Yeah, yeah. So they use a lot of mushrooms in it, and the mushroom and the chicken will just like marry in the soup, and it's just mind blowing, man.
Creamy with a small touch of sourness.
Yeah, man. The best part about this is that they use galangal in the dish. That's where the kha in tom kha gai came from. So it's galangal is a huge thing in that dish. But the thing is, you don't actually eat the galangal. So they'll chop it up quite roughly. So you get the taste, but you don't eat the thing. And it's a whole different level. It takes you to a whole different level.
Why isn't this dish available in Malaysia?
I don't know.
Makes you wonder.
To correct you on that, it is available in Malaysia.
Oh.
But not that many shops sells it. So I can suggest one shop in Puchong called Ali Sara. They actually have tom kha gai. It's quite good. Not bad. If you compare it to the original recipe in Phuket, it's not that bad actually. And you can find the shop on Waze. Just Waze Ali Sara, A-L-I-S-A-R-R-A, and you'll find the restaurant. Just be sure that you gotta be there around 7. They serve dinner, and it's usually packed. If you arrive at the shop around 9, usually you can't get any seats. You can't find this. Definitely can't find this on your normal Thai restaurant, especially in the malls. You gotta definitely try it out.
I will. Thanks, Nachman.
No problem.
And now here's Feiku speaking to co-founder of Heartland Foods Asia, Karina Bahrain.
With me today, Karina from Heartland Foods. Your original background in terms of careers was...
All of us come from quite diverse backgrounds. There's three of us involved in the business, myself and a lady called Jacqueline Howe, both with corporate backgrounds, and then Sarah, who also comes from hospitality and all sorts of other things. We basically came together because we found a product that we really liked, and we decided that, okay, let's take it forward, and from there things have grown.
What was that initial product?
The initial product was a range of sausages called Sailors, manufactured by a South African couple in Langkawi. And that was discovered because both Jackie and I live in Langkawi.
Oh, okay. So you're just a visitor to a muddy confluence.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Now, I mean, we all find things that we like to eat and we go, my God, this is a great product. This is a great brand. I would love to, you know, do something about it. But very rarely do we actually do something about it because, well, it's a pain to take on a product, develop it, distribute it, market it. So what was the impetus for you to, hey, go from consumer to distributor?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Jackie and I own a couple of restaurants in Langkawi. So we came across the product and started using the products in our restaurants. So we weren't the only consumers. We were also offering it to other consumers. And then we got to know the manufacturers. And there was a really nice story behind this couple and how they came to Langkawi all the way from South Africa and how they started missing home and therefore tried to make their own sausages. And people liked it and it grew. So I think at that time, at the point when we decided to begin the distribution business, one of the impetus was to also help this couple make that leap. When we met them, they were still predominantly servicing the Langkawi market. And we realized that, you know, there were a lot of friends of ours who were coming to our restaurant and liking the product and taking it back. So there was potential.
Right.
Yeah.
Since then, you've been around now for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Have you then developed a lot of other new brands or encouraged new brands to come under that umbrella?
That's something we're actively doing this year because I think the first 18 months, our major focus was trying to get the Sailors brand into the KL market. And we did it very slowly. We first started testing it at pocket bazaars and things like that to see whether there was an appetite for it beyond just the consumers we encountered. And it turned out there was. So we then took the next step, which is going to the big grocery chains and also going to, you know, other restaurants in KL. And that's proven quite successful.
Yeah. It does take a certain kind of animal to be interested to do this kind of thing. I'm a certain kind of animal in the loose sense of the word. A long time ago, I started a sort of gourmet curry business that I sold to Harvey Nichols and places like that.
Mm.
And it sounds very glamorous and very exciting, but actually, you know, it's all hard drudge. You know, going to trade shows, talking to people, calling people. And I really understood quite quickly, very quickly actually, that I did not have the stomach to do that kind of thing. I could sell quite well, but the actual drudgery of following up and chasing people and, you know, collecting money really was, for me, a very arduous chore.
Mm-hmm.
So why would something like that, I mean, so I find it quite unusual that when someone is in a good job or has a good situation and owns restaurants and suddenly says, hey, I'm going to be a food distributor. You know? Is there something I don't know?
No, well, I think it's in our, between the three of us, you've got, you know, a curious mix of people. There's two of us based in Langkawi, one person based in KL. So there was a nice sort of marriage in terms of geography for us to be in touch very closely with the producer at that time and also be able to penetrate the market here. And I think we were also looking for things that would help extend, you know, our entrepreneur base because all three of us are business people. And that's really where it comes from. And we like to eat. So,
naturally,
you know, common ground.
I'd be hard pressed to find a Malaysian that actually says they don't like to eat.
Ah, so that's
true. Kind of not really an exception thing. It's more like, yeah, and your point is?
Well, one of us is very, very, very fussy about our food.
Okay, I guess I'm saying you're not talking about yourself.
I know. The one that's absent. She comes from a family that I think really prides themselves on their own recipes and traditions and things like that. And that's part of what you see if you were to come to her restaurant, right? The ones we have in Langkawi. But because she's so fussy about her food, I think when she found something that she liked and she shared it with the other, the me and Sarah, we saw that, okay, there really is potential here. Plus, we were getting really good feedback from people who were consuming the product.
Yeah, sure. Now, you said before that you own a restaurant and your Sarah owns a restaurant in Langkawi.
Me and Jacqueline own a restaurant.
Sorry,
so Sarah's based in KL.
What restaurants do you own?
One called Fat Cupid, which is in a boutique hotel called La Pari Pari, and another one on the beach called Sugar.
So what do you think you've brought to the table in terms of skill sets? Because you've been a restaurant owner, you've been on both sides of the table dealing with distributors and also dealing, you know, and giving the product to customers.
I think that is what makes us unique from a distributor point of view, because we've been the customer. So when it comes to approaching customers, especially the food trade, we know how to speak to them. We understand their concerns. We know what they're looking for in terms of a supplier. They want someone who's reliable, who's going to be able to work with them, given, you know, their timelines, their quantities, all those other different things that it takes to run a restaurant. So when it came to penetrating the food trade with Sailors, really our experience on the restaurant side helped a lot because we run two.
Yeah, and when you're working with a cottage industry like Sailors, where it's just a mind part job making sausages in the kitchen, mm-hmm. were you also needed to offer hands-on advice in terms of, you know, prolonging the shelf life of a product, improving the, you know, viability or the saleability of a product in terms of taste and ingredients and cost versus what you've invested and then what you're getting back? Did you ever play quite a hands-on role in that?
By the time we had gotten to know Sailors, they were already quite established in Langkawi. So their product range was already as it was. But I think where we provided feedback for them in terms of expanding into KL was how they were positioning themselves. Because if you look around the KL groceries now, you will see that there's quite a wide range of artisanal sort of sausages that you can find. So that's where, you know, my own experience, for example, and I come from a brand marketing type of background, came into play. We could talk to them about how they were positioned versus competitors. And, you know, also because we were doing pocket bazaars in the beginning, we got direct feedback from consumers in terms of what they liked and didn't like.
I guess it'll also be useful for you from here on in to start nurturing brands where they're fledgling.
Yes.
At the point where they've come up with a great idea, they've got a great recipe, but beyond that, they've got no clue.
Yeah.
And is that an intention of yours to make it part of your, you know,
absolutely, absolutely. I think for Heartlands, we don't view ourselves as just a distributor because of how we came about into the business. We like to be able to work with producers, whether they're growers of raw material or whether they're producers of certain types of food, and be able to let them focus on what they do best, which is producing the goods, and then getting us to help them bring it into the market.
So are there any parameters in terms of what brands you would accept under your umbrella or no?
I wouldn't distinguish it by brand. I would distinguish it by product quality. I think all three of us are very clear that we want products that are good quality, where possible preservative-free and wholesome. Basically, it's things that we're going to eat. If I'm not going to eat it, I won't sell it.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And do they have to be Malaysian?
At the moment, the focus is Malaysian because we would also like to be able to take some of these brands and export them.
Being new to the distribution business and having been in the game now for over a year, what was a couple of important things that you learned?
Good Lord.
If you could just distill it to
a
just
couple?
Two.
Oh, wow. I think there's been lots of challenges. Dealing with consumers and getting their feedback has not been difficult. I think even the food trade has not been too difficult, simply because a couple of us come from the restaurant background, so approaching them was easy. Dealing with the grocers was a steep learning curve because, you know, that's a volume game. So all the different operational things that come into play when you're dealing with the big guys, those were big challenges. But good learning.
Yeah. No, I empathize. I've been down that road before. I have been down that road before and then some. So I totally empathize with you. Random checks on your shipments, you know, where you had to strip all your goods and get them chemically tested.
Yes.
Every single pallet.
Yeah. Yeah, well, for us, it's us random checking to make sure they've got stock.
That's
most
right.
Of the time.
I should have signed up with you if only you'd been around then. Next up, Karina is going to be talking about some of the brands she represents, some of the brands she hopes to represent. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. This is BFM 89.9. You're listening to Feeding Time with me, Karina, from Heartland Foods, a food distribution company specializing in local, artisanal, preferably organic products. Now, you mentioned before that you had the first business that you took on was Sailor Sausages.
Yes.
And it's quite an endearing little story, you know, husband and wife from South Africa.
Yes.
How did they land up? How did they end up in Langkawi?
They took a very long road by sea.
So they were just traveling the world by boat and then they decided to stop in Langkawi.
They decided to stay in Langkawi, and I think after a while they missed their food from home, and that's what made them decide to, you know, experiment with making sausages.
But they had never done it before.
Not that I know of. I think previously in South Africa they were farmers,
so they would have some had some knowledge some, of yes. working with meat yes. and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Now, what's that African sausage word?
Boerewors.
Boerewors.
The one that looks
it.
Like a Boerewors. Snail.
Yes. The long coiled sausages. Yes. Now, that's probably what they specialize in making.
They do have boerewors, and I think there's a very niche appeal. Boerewors is a very different texture to most of the sausages that Malaysians would be used to because it tends to be chunkier.
Yeah.
It's a bit heavier. But Sailors does produce, you know, other type of sausages that Malaysians may be more familiar with. You know, chicken, beef and lamb, the usual three.
So tell us a little bit about the journey they took from boat people to, not boat people, but sailors to sausage makers.
I don't know when that tipping point happened, but having spent time with Don and Jean, who founded Sailors, I think really they missed their home food. And that's what it was that prompted them to start doing it. And I think once they started doing it, other yachties, as we would call them, you know, these guys who sail, because Don and Jean lived on a boat. They didn't own a home. Yeah, even in Langkawi, they lived on a boat. And they started selling to the other yachties who were docked, you know, in the same harbour as they were. And that's when it expanded.
It must be quite challenging making sausages from a boat galley.
Oh, no. Okay, they do have a manufacturing facility on land.
Well,
but
now
their
they
home
do.
Is a boat.
But when they started out?
Oh, I don't know. They must have done it from the boat. I've been to the boat. It's not very large.
No, I know, because I sail regularly.
Yeah.
So I know the challenges of creating food in a very, very small, very, very limited space. So for me, I'm thinking, wow, grinding meat.
I
know,
right?
Doing the gut and putting the meat in there and filling a casing without it going everywhere.
Yep.
Would have been quite interesting.
Exactly.
So how did you meet them?
Again, because we started picking up the product, because Sailors was already marketed in the grocery stores in Langkawi, and we were looking for products that we could use for our breakfast menu. And when we tried their product, we liked it. So we sought them out and tried to look for them. And not very difficult to find. It's not a very big island. Got to know them. And that's how things kind of roll from there.
I think what you found as well appealing about Sailor sausages is that it's got no preservatives, it's got no fillers,
yes.
It's just pure good meat.
Yeah, for example, their chicken sausages is just chicken breast. And you can really taste the difference. Quite honestly, that's what took us, you know, kind of one step back. We're like, okay, this is different from whatever else we're finding out in the market and what the big distributors were supplying to us. So we took a serious look at their product after that and tried all the different variances and discovered, you know, there's more than one thing they do that's good.
Which is?
Well, I personally like their lamb merguez sausages because I like things a little bit spicy.
Right. And you obviously have a restaurant, so have there been any creative ways for you to use the product that they have? Which you can then translate and you know, share, pay forward to your customers?
Well, in our restaurants, we predominantly use their products in the breakfast menu. In one of our beachside restaurants at one point, we were actually doing a meat platter, which featured the boerewors. But like I said, I think we found that the boerewors has a niche appeal because the texture is quite different. But on the KL side, when we start bringing the product to KL and getting people to sample it, instead of just, you know, kind of boiling sausages and giving you little bits on a toothpick, what Sarah did was she went to pocket bazaars and she actually opened up hot dog stands and made her own kind of relishes and coleslaw and things like that and proved very popular. And that's how people got to know the product in KL as part of a hot dog. And then they started asking, where are these hot dogs coming from? Because they're really good. And then we would tell them, okay, it's Sailors.
Yeah. That's an interesting approach to entering the market.
Yeah.
By doing it that way where you actually pique their curiosity and they actually ask you of their own volition.
Yes.
Rather than you saying, here's a sausage, try it, why don't you buy it?
Yeah.
You know? And in fact, there's so many ways we can use sausages in our
meals. Of course.
Meals. You know, like when I'm feeling lazy or I make a classic pasta like salsiccia porcini, you know, just squeeze it out of the casing.
Exactly.
And then just toss it with the wine and the cream and the porcini. And you have a wonderful pasta. And there's so many ways to use it, even as a meatball pasta, for example, you know. So it's very compelling when the product is 100%, not just authentic, but committed to producing it with good ingredients.
Yes.
So you know you're not putting fillers into your body. You know
yes.
you're not putting E numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah. And because I think that the thing about sausages, the perception a lot of Malaysians still have, because I think this whole artisanal sausage movement is relatively new in this country, as opposed to, you know, if you go to the UK, you go to Australia, the butchers are doing their own thing, and you really get a lot of artisanal variety. In Malaysia, it's not the case. Yeah, it's still something that's relatively young, I would say. People still think of sausages as bad meat. You know, it's got preservatives, it's all the off bits, it's, you know, things like that. But what we offer is something that's, it's really good, wholesome meat, nice flavors, in a sausage casing.
So how would you compare Sailors against, now I'm being a devil's advocate, how would you compare Sailors against, say, Jared and Rawlins, where Dennis Rawlins is a friend of mine as well, and he was also a sailor, I'll just say. And he started making sausages in his kitchen. And again, he eschewed the whole artificial flavorings, filler kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So very similar dynamic, I guess, and a very similar evolution.
Yeah.
Have you tried their product?
Yes.
So would you say...
Yes, ours is better.
Yes, yours is better. There you go.
I think so.
So now what flavors the Sailors have on the market that you're representing them for?
We've got just normal beef. We've also got a chili beef, which is a bit spicy. We have a chicken and herb. We've also got the lamb merguez and the borowa. So those are kind of the main ones that we would put into the market.
Now, you mentioned as well that recently you've taken on another brand, Rosanna's Homemade Foods.
Yes.
And that's more in terms of sauces, Italian
ragus,
sauces,
pestos. We like Rosanna. I recently had the opportunity to taste the... Well, of course, Sarah had access to the product earlier, being based in KL. And on her recent visit, she flew up and brought me some packs of Rosanna's food. Really liked it. And we're very happy that she's going to come on board with us. So I think from her perspective, she's the one who's doing all the research, putting the recipes together, and hopefully we'll be able to partner her and take it forward and send it out to our distribution network so that she can quickly then enter the market in a more kind of volume way.
Because I guess in terms of where she's concerned, she's very hands-on getting her halal certification, doing her own labels, really from step one through to step X. For you, there's not as much nurturing in the sense that she knows exactly what she wants to achieve.
Yeah.
So in that respect, how would you handle a brand like that? To help them out.
Although she, you know, I understand she's very hands-on, and I think she spent a lot of time looking at it. Sometimes it also helps to have a third-person perspective. Someone is a little bit more distant to say, okay, I know you want to do it this way, but if you take a step back and look at what's on the shelf, where does it fit? As a producer, I think someone who's a little bit more distant can give you that perspective. That's one. Two, as a distributor, we already have an established network of, you know, 30 or 40 restaurants. Most of the main sort of artisanal or higher-end grocers know us, and they're already carrying our product. So it's easier for her to enter those markets if she works with us rather than her pounding the pavement because, you know, I'm sure she would rather spend her time making product and focusing on the quality than, you know, talking to different grocers and 15,000 restaurants.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now, the market is quite saturated with sauces. You know, everything from the Paul Newman's jars in the supermarkets to other more artisanal stuff. But there's a lot of sauces out there. How are you going to make her voice heard?
A lot of sauces out there don't have very good stuff in them.
So you're going to emphasize on the quality of the ingredients?
Absolutely, yeah. Because personally speaking, and I can say this because I've tasted her product, you can taste the difference. When something is made well and the ingredients are good, you really can taste the difference between something, you know, that comes in a jar and is mass produced. So for us, like I said, We're only interested in products that we can stand behind 100%. You know, if we taste something, it's good, we're going to want to talk to you, you as in the producer. And then if we meet you and we like what we see and we get the feeling that you are just as committed to that sort of standards and quality, then yes, we want to work with you.
Yeah.
So we're actively looking for people who would like to work with us in terms of getting their products out there to a wider network, or even people who have products that they think may need a little bit of help in terms of branding and getting it ready to market.
Yeah, I think because in the last 5 to 8 years, Malaysia has been a very exciting place.
For food, yes,
for fledgling brands, for new startups, for young F&B enthusiasts, yes, wanting to create their own bacon jam or, you know, chili or sambals. And it's fine and dandy saying, okay, I'm really good, I got a great recipe. But often the stumbling block comes when they go, well, okay, so I've found the packaging, I made the product, now what? So it's fantastic that you guys are now here to say, look, guys, we can help you reach a much wider market a lot quicker than you would achieve if you were
by
working
yourself
in isolation, knocking on one door at a time, you know, or one email at a time.
Yeah, because let's be real. I mean, if somebody is producing something as artisanal out of their homes, likelihood is they have started selling the product through word of mouth or maybe a little Facebook page. Beyond maybe, I don't know, 100 jars a month or something, if you're lucky. To be able to, you know, go beyond that, it really means you have to start, you know, building a sales pipeline, doing the business development. And if you're by yourself or maybe a husband and wife or, you know, maybe a little family, you're not going to have the time to do it.
Yeah.
Because just producing the product and packaging it alone is going to take all your time.
And I guess that's where you come into play.
Yes.
And you should say that, take them to the next quantum level and say, guys, let's do this and let's one big giant leap rather than little scrabbling steps, you know,
plus,
towards the abyss.
Also, I think some of these people who are doing artisanal products, because you're selling it word of mouth, there are a lot of requirements that you may not realize you need in order to enter the volume market. Things like, you know, nutritional labels, barcoding, all these kind of boring bits and pieces. We have to kind of educate them and say, okay, you need this. Otherwise, there's no way, you know, the supermarket's going to want you, etc.
So apart from the sauces and the sausages, what are some other new brands or products that you're working with currently?
At the moment, we're actually trying to look at growers of herbs and spices that are based in Malaysia. We're currently talking to a couple of them. It's been a little bit slow going because a lot of these organic growers are very small, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how we can maybe get them to collaborate so that there's enough volume for something that's commercially viable on a continuous basis. Because with crops, sometimes they're seasonal. So that's one. That's one area that we're very, very interested in, because I think there are growers here who produce some interesting things. The other thing is we're also still not going to ignore the Asian side of things. The Asian side of packaged food, you know, the sauces and things like that. So far, for example, with Sailors and Rosanna, it's been very Western. But we also have a very rich Asian tradition of food, which I'd like to be able to see if we can kind of nurture some of those artisanal brands and even take them outside of the country.
There's always a lot of room for very good sambal.
Absolutely. Sambal, curry paste, asa, you name it.
Right.
And Malaysian food or Southeast Asian food is also growing in terms of recognition, familiarity among the bigger developed markets like Europe, you know, the UK, Australia. I mean, we see it in our own restaurants. And I don't see why we cannot, you know, take advantage of the heritage we've got to help also our guys move forward.
Again, going back to the earlier point, which is that there are a lot of people out there doing sambals. They are.
Yeah.
So they're going to the little bazaars or they're going to the little street fairs.
That's right.
And they're selling the 50 jars each time, you know, and then they go home.
Mm-hmm.
But now that this, you know, this show is going to be on air with your Heartland Foods in it, hopefully it will give the people that next crucial step, you know?
Absolutely. You know, just as an aside, the other day I was looking at, you know, the possibility of pastes, whether there was any appeal. I came across a lady, a Singaporean lady, who is selling nyonya paste in jars in the UK.
Wow.
So why can't we do it from here and bring the product there?
Totally.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason why you can't do it. And now more than ever, Malaysian food and Malaysian ingredients are very popular.
Yes.
In England and Australia.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's such a curiosity about Malaysian food and people are finding the flavors very compelling. And a lot more accessible than you would have previously imagined.
Yes.
Thanks to, you know, food shows on TV or thanks to cheap travel, people are getting more familiar with those flavors. And it's a perfect time, actually, to exploit that kind of interest.
No, I completely agree. Because I think the other thing people are starting to travelers who come here, for example, and taste our food, one of the things they're also starting to realize, the kind of more sophisticated ones, they know that our food is not easy to make.
Yes.
You know, I mean, a curry paste will not taste good until it's been cooked over a slow fire for hours. Who's got the time to do that in London?
Yes.
No one.
Yes. And unless you have a very strong extractor fan, your house will stink for weeks afterwards.
So, hey.
Yes. I think that's the one thing that's very compelling for Asian products, Asian artisanal brands.
Yes.
Is that it's very hard to replicate. Yes. It's very troublesome to do well. Mm-hmm. So it's so much easier to go out and buy a jar of something amazing that's already been made and proven than to try and do it yourself at home.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a little bit more ginger, just go down to the grocery store. Right. Add a couple more slices, but at least the base is there.
Yeah.
And that base takes a long time to make. We all know a rendang takes ages to make. Curries take ages to make.
Not just that, but the base is coming from a place of absolute goodness.
Yes.
You know, it's good products.
Yes.
Quality products that you know you can trust, and they're not an E number in sight.
Yeah, and you're using kind of fresh ingredients. Yeah. You know, let's say a Nyonya curry, for example, as opposed to an Indian curry, uses a lot of live herbs. It doesn't use a lot of dry spices. And sometimes to be able to get access to all those things that are required for that curry in Melbourne or London is difficult.
Yes, that's certainly true. So if anybody would like to buy the Sailor Sausages or Rosanna's homemade foods, they can go to heartlandfoods.com.
They can go to heartlandfoods.com. The Sailor Sausages are already quite widely available in quite a few of the big grocery stores. Village Grocers is a good place to go and find them as well. Rosanna, I think, is going to come on stream in about a month or so.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's very exciting times for you. And I think it's also very exciting times for all the little cottage industry foodpreneurs that have
Please
been working, slaving in the kitchens, not knowing what to do next. So this is the perfect opportunity. Get in touch with Karina at heartlandfoods.com or drop her a line on Facebook or whatever. And and then you guys can catch up and hopefully magic will happen.
Yay!
I certainly wish you the best.
Thank
and Heartland Foods the best. And I'm looking forward to trying some of your products in the future.
Oh, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Karina and Heartland Foods. If you want to find out what they're giving away this week on the show, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time. Alternately, you can follow Faye on Instagram and Twitter at Miss Koo. That's MISSKHOO for more delicious tidbits about the show. Till next Saturday, have yourself a very tasty week. You've been listening to Feeding Time. My name is Off Newting on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.